Mount, where Jesus is taking the he's taking the law, and he keeps saying, you know, you've heard that it was said by them of old, and he's basically quoting scripture, and then he says, but I say unto you, and so he's doing something new, and you know that's really important. The New Testament tells us that we live not under the law, but under grace. And we live in a new covenant. So it is very beneficial to study the Old Testament. It is very important to study the Old Testament. And there is much that we can learn from it. But we've always got to remember that Jesus made an awful lot of changes to what was expected of his followers. And the Sermon on the Mount is such an intensification over the law of Moses that it really calls us to an extremely high level of living. And so we want to pick up chapter 5, verse 33, as we talk about forswearing yourself. And the word forswear, translated into English, would basically, if we were to define that, we would say that means to commit perjury, okay? So that's where we start. So let's read, we'll read down through verse 37. Again, you have heard that it hath been said by them of old time, thou shalt not forswear thyself, but shalt perform unto the Lord thine oaths. But I say unto you, swear not at all, neither by heaven, for it's God's throne, nor by the earth, for it is his footstool, neither by Jerusalem, for it is the city of the great king. Neither shalt thou swear by the head, because thou canst not make one hair white or black. But let your communication be yea, yea, nay, nay, for whatsoever is more than these cometh of evil. And so he's quoting from Leviticus 19:12, where it says that you shall not swear by my name falsely, says the Lord. And to commit perjury in that regard would be to take an oath or to swear to do something and then not do it. So I guess the thing that comes to mind first of all for me in that regard would be Jephthah, the judge. He takes an oath. Lord, if you will give me victory in this situation, when I go home, the very first thing that I see that comes out of my house, I'll sacrifice you. And it was a extremely foolish thing to say, but he did. And God gave him victory in this situation, and he returned home, and his daughter was the first thing that came out. And as we read the rest of the story, it's pretty clear he did give her some time, but he did sacrifice his daughter in keeping of that oath. And so they were that cognizant of, you know, when I say something with my mouth, when I make a promise to God, it is absolutely imperative that I keep that, okay? At least the devout were. We read today, if you're reading through your Bible, according to our read through the Bible in a year, Numbers 28 through 30 today, we read about the taking of oaths, and if a man takes an oath, he's bound to that. If a woman is still in her father's house and she takes an oath and her daddy hears her, he could actually nullify that. He could say, whoa, let's not do that. He could offer a sacrifice and get her out of that, and he could do the same for his wife, or he could let it stand. But a divorced woman or a widow, she was basically responsible in that regard. And so you see this all throughout the Old Testament, this idea of making an oath or forswearing yourself before the Lord. So take a look at Ecclesiastes is one of my favorites. I always I always get folks who are going to get married to read this, because, you know, in the day and time that we live, unless you do something on your own, you know, I hope nobody here has done this, but Lord, if you get me out of this, I'll, and usually it's, we promise to do something we're supposed to do anyway, you know, Lord, you get me out of this financial mess, and I promise I'll return a portion to you. God's going, well, whoop-de-doo, you're supposed to do that anyway. But Ecclesiastes 5:1 says, keep thy foot when thou goest to the house of God, and be more ready to hear than to give the sacrifice of fools, for they consider not that they do evil. And the sacrifice of fools is this: be not rash with thy mouth, and let not thine heart be hasty to utter anything before God. For God is in heaven, and thou art upon earth, therefore let thy words be few. For a dream cometh through the multitude of business, and a fool's voice is known by a multitude of words. When thou vowest a vow unto God, defer not to pay it, for he hath no pleasure in fools. Pay that which thou hast vowed. Better it is that thou shouldest not vow, than that thou shouldest vow and not pay. And so, the Old Testament is there's an awful lot of that, and God has a lot to say about that. And so Jesus brings that up, and he says there, you've heard it said by them of old time, thou shalt not forswear thyself, or to commit perjury, which means to lie under oath. By the way, is it against the law to lie to the cops? We don't need cops here, do we? It's not against the law to lie to the cops. It's a cop's job to prove that you're lying to him, but it's not against the law to lie to the cops. That's why all this stupid stuff in the news, they lied to the FBI. They lied. So what? It's not against the law to lie to the FBI. I don't recommend doing it, because their job is to investigate you, and when they find out that you've lied, then they'll take you to court. Then they'll make you swear, and once you stand in court, then is it against the law to lie? Yes, it's called perjury. And what's that? Of course they will. Absolutely. But ultimately, it's not against the law. We don't have any law against lying to a police officer. He's wearing a camera. He has a radar gun. He's got all kinds of tools to use to prove that you're lying. But what you see is, and by the way, we'll talk more about that in just a second, but the thing that had happened in the day of Jesus is that they had taken all of these Old Testament laws, and they had figured out every loophole they could possibly find to try to exploit them. So Jesus says, look, here's what I say to you. Swear not at all. And then he starts with all these listings. So what a Jewish person would do is, and it reminds me so much of America, it's not even funny. If they wanted to prove that they were telling the truth, then they would invoke God's name into it. And they would say, I swear by God that I'm telling the truth. And they had gotten to the point where they had, if they didn't swear, then they weren't necessarily telling the truth. This is like talking to a Muslim. A Muslim has actually been taught that it's okay to lie to an infidel, someone who's not a Muslim. And, you know, if you go to Rome, you will lose something in the airport and you will be mugged. That's just all there is to it. It's going to happen. The Italian people, especially in that particular area, it is just... If you go to Albuquerque, New Mexico, and you stay in a hotel on the interstates, you will have your car stolen. If you go to San Antonio, Texas, and you hang out at the salt grass that's closest to the fairgrounds, you will have your pickup stolen. My buddy that I went to college with had his pickup stolen just the other day. But if you deal in law in the United States of America today, you are in a situation kind of like this. I will make a deal with you, but unless it's ironclad, written out by lawyers, signed 47 different ways, you really can't hold me to it. I'm slippery as butter when you try to hold me down to something, unless you can nail me down on this. Now, that ought not to be. And that's what had happened. So what people would do was they would try to get out of swearing by God, because that would really be they knew what the Bible said. If you swear in the name of the Lord, you kind of got to do that, so they'd swear by heaven. It was still pretty important. They were sort of saying what they were saying was mostly true, but if they really wanted out of it, they could probably get out of that. Or they swear by the earth. You ever heard somebody swear on their dead mother's grave or something like that, you know? Yeah. Where does this come from? Well, what that is a really... It just goes to show you how little trust these people's word was. They were habitual liars. They habitually broke deals. So entering into business deals. By the way, if you enter into a business deal, you are supposed to keep your end of the deal. A friend of mine was talking about deer leases not long ago in this part of the country. And they just mentioned, they said, you know, you have to have a deer lease drawn up by a lawyer. They said, if you don't, you're a fool. Because one side or the other of that will, you'll think that this fall that you get to hunt X number of deer, you get to hunt X number of days, you get to hunt X number of pastures, you have to pay this amount. And you'll walk in there about the end of September and they'll come in and say, we gave that pasture to so-and-so and you can only shoot half the deer you said. Wait a minute, we have a deal and I paid you money. So what? Doesn't matter. You don't have this contract signed by both parties, drawn up by a lawyer. So I'm just throwing things off the top of my head. Cattle deals gone bad. Pre-contracting of cattle. Used to see it all the time. We would go in the summertime. We would look at a bunch of calves in the summer. We'd say, yep, grass looks like we're probably going to make it till this fall. They weigh about this much now. They'll probably weigh about that much then. So we would do a pre-contract. And we would sell those cattle on a video sale in the summertime for delivery in the fall. Do it all the time. And when you get to the fall, especially if cattle prices have gone down. So if the rancher did a good job of selling those cattle in the summer and the price has gone down between now and then, you would be surprised. The weaseling, whining, sniveling, crying, cheating, conniving that people do to try to get out of those contracts because they paid too much for those cattle. And everything had to be signed, everything had to be documented, everything had to, you know, contract after contract and all these kind of things. But it's the world that we live in, much like the world that they lived in. And the whole point is what Jesus says next. He says, look, he says, when you don't swear at all, when you swear by heaven, that's God's throne. So you're still invoking the name of God when you swear by heaven. Don't swear by the earth, that's his footstool. You're still invoking the name of God when you swear by the earth. Nor by Jerusalem, that's the city of the great king. Nor by your head, because you cannot make one hair white or black. Now I know that lots of people think that they can, but you're just playing a game. Whatever color your hair is the color that God knows that it is. But his point is that you can't, you have no control over these things, and yet you're using this to invoke the name of God in some way. He's the one who created you. But, verse 37, let your communication be yea, yea, nay, nay, whatsoever more of these cometh of evil. Basically what Jesus says is keep your word. If you are a Christian and you say, I will sell my cattle to you for this price, and this fall you come to that time, then you've got to sell your cattle to that guy at that price. It doesn't matter if the market's gone up a bunch. You should have done something to take care of that. You should have managed your risk. If you are a Christian and you go to college and you borrow money to pay for your college from me, a taxpayer, when it comes time, you pay it back. Because if you vote for Bernie, you're going to be voting to break every single solitary oath that those people made on those college loans. And white-collar people, supposedly, are going to go and do their wonderful little college at the expense of the American taxpayer. Then they're going to not pay that back. Then Bernie's going to forgive that. But where'd that money come from? Taxpayer money out of the government. So who's going to pay that back? A bunch of blue-collar people who didn't want to go to college anyway. Or maybe blue-collar people that are a whole lot smarter than those white-collar college-educated people who went and lied and cheated and stole. And that's what he wants to do. He just wants to lie, cheat, and steal. It is sin to borrow and not pay back. So if you say, I'm going to pay that money back, then you pay it back. If you go out there to Arizona, to Maricopa, and you buy you a house that costs five times more than you even think that you could pay back on an upside down real estate deal. And then it comes in there and it's and the interest rate changes and the market changes and oh my goodness, the market goes down, my house is losing money, I can't get out of it. What do? You pay it back because you owe it, because you gave your word. Because that's how business works. If that doesn't work, if that breaks down, then you can't trust anybody, anywhere, for anything. And we're almost there. We're working on it really, really, really hard. Some of these deals are like trying to nail Jell-O to the wall. But especially if you're a Christian. If you're a Christian, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter whether you signed a contract or not. If you're a Christian and you say yes, then you mean yes, and that means you follow through with it. So, got a friend, J.B. Taylor. He used to tell a story about this from his girls, and it was great. He said when his girls were little, they got invited to a birthday party on Saturday. And they were very excited because at the time they didn't have anything better to do. And so they said, yes, we will come to your birthday party. Had to RSVP because they were cooking hot dogs, right? Because, you know, two packages versus three packages of hot dogs, big time expensive. We've got to know who else would be there. So they asked for an RSVP. They gave their RSVP. They said, we're coming. Wednesday of that week, they got an invitation to a swimming party. At exactly, wouldn't you know it, exactly the same time as the birthday party. But the birthday party was with some people that they liked, okay, maybe even family. Maybe in family. But the swimming party was with somebody they really liked, and it was really going to be fun. It was going to be, oh, it's going to be so exciting. Dad, can we go to the swimming party? He says, no. He already told them he'd go to the birthday party. I said, well, we had rather go to the swimming party. Dad says, well, you told them you would come. You gave your word. You said we'll be there. So tell the swimming party folks no. And they cried, and they cried, and they whined, and they begged, and they pleaded, and they came up with excuses, and all these things. And so JB, he's a crusty old guy anyway. So he used it to full weight of you know, the pressure that he could exert upon his girls, and he was still using it. They were grown, and they were grandparents by the time I heard this story. But he was talking about this passage of scripture, and he told that story. And if you say you're going to do it, then you need to do it. And you need to be very, very careful about what you say. If you don't think you can do it, then don't say that you will. Don't contract to do some work for somebody knowing full well that there's no way that you can be there to do that work because you're already committed over here. Don't do it. If you're a Christian, you sit down and you say, I would love to do this work for you. I'm 3 weeks out. Now, when you do that, you say, that's an approximation, give or take, depends on the weather, blah, 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 but it's going to be about 3 weeks out. It's imperative that we be people of our word. And he says anything other than that, it's just evil. But you know what? We live in a world where that's totally acceptable. People say they're going to be at something and don't show up all the time. But as Christians, we should make sure that we're careful with what we say. Because basically, as a Christian, we are, everything that we do is before God. So notice, he says there, verse 33, thou shalt not forswear thyself, but shall perform unto the Lord thine oaths. Okay? But as he goes into it and talks about swearing, certainly that includes dealings with other people. So in my dealings with you, I am also standing before God as I do that. And it's real, it's just simple. It's just simple. Keep your word. Now, Jehovah's Witnesses won't swear in the court of law. Or they try not to. They can make them do it. But Mennonites won't swear in a court. I can't take any oath. Jesus completely. I can't take an oath. I can't put my hand on the Bible and swear to tell the truth. By the way, would you ever call a witness who wouldn't do that? No way. No way. I mean, don't you remember? Who was it? We just had the political garbage that did this very thing. I'll stand before a congressional trial, but I won't swear. What? Well, then why would you waste your time? Are you going to tell the truth? Maybe. And maybe not. Wait, are you kidding me? We can't do business with that. That won't ever work. So is that what this means? No, of course not. Listen, there is nothing wrong with vowing to love your husband or your wife till death. Well, guess what's wrong? Not keeping that vow. That's what's wrong. Okay? How would you like it if y'all were to come to a wedding that I were to perform and I were to say, I'm going to use the words of an Alan Jackson song. I'll try. Are you gonna love, honor, and cherish your husband till death do you part? I'll try. Are you gonna be faithful to her and her alone? I'll try. I don't care about you trying. You stand right here, right now, today, and you say yes or no. If you say I try, that's just saying no. And so, by the way, Jesus stood on trial under oath. So let's look at it right quick. Matthew 26, verse 63. Matthew chapter 26, verse 63. And so verse 62 says, the high priest arose and said unto him, answerest thou nothing? What is it which these witness against thee? But Jesus held his peace. And the high priest answered and said unto him, I adjure thee by the living God. Lay your hand on the Bible and tell me the truth, that thou tell us whether thou be the Christ, the Son of God. Jesus said to him, thou hast said. So in other words, yes, what you say. Yep, you said it. Hereafter you shall see the Son of Man sitting on the right hand of power and coming in the clouds of heaven. Is there anything wrong with taking an oath in a court of law to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth? No. But you better tell the truth when you do it. Because and here's the thing. Here's what's so sad, once again, is that we have to force people into something like this. Because we ought to tell the truth all the time. And that's what let your yea be yea and your nay be nay is all about. Just kind of simple. But basically what Jesus is doing is he's saying, look, instead of taking these great, instead of living your life in a way that somebody has to nail you down, that they have to get you in court, and they have to get your hand on the Bible before you tell the truth, just tell the truth to the police when they pull you over, or don't say anything. You know, definitely don't lie. I mean, you have the right to remain silent, and you can always do that. And Jesus did that too. And so there's nothing wrong with that. But whatever you do, don't lie. So then he picks up verse 38. And he's going to change gears just a little bit. You've heard that it has been said, an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. Now that definitely is the Old Testament law. There's several places, but Leviticus chapter 24 is one of the places that it talks about that. And I would like to read that one because that kind of ties in and ties a couple of things together that are pretty interesting. So Leviticus chapter 19. I'm sorry, chapter 24. Leviticus 24 and verse 19. So it says, let's go back to verse 17. And he that killeth any man shall surely be put to death. So there's the law of capital punishment, which, by the way, was already in effect for all of mankind all the way back in Genesis 9. Verse 18, and he that killeth a beast shall make it good, beast for beast. That makes sense. And if a man cause a blemish in his neighbor, as he hath done, so shall it be done to him. Breach for breach, eye for eye, tooth for tooth. As he hath caused a blemish in a man, so shall it be done to him again. And he that killeth the beast, he shall restore it, and he that killeth the man, he shall be put to death. You shall have one manner of law as well for the stranger, as for one of your own country, for I am the Lord your God. So no sanctuary cities, ambassadors who have diplomatic immunity, none of that kind of foolishness. If you are in the confines of this country, you are under the law of this country. That's the way Israel was laid out. I think that's the way the United States of America should be laid out as well. But what this does is it keeps from having too much of a penalty for something. So if you have done personal injury to somebody, if I have injured your beast, if I'm driving down the road and your cow is on your property and I run over her, I owe you a cow. I don't owe you 20 cows. You see, that's what the eye for an eye business means. If I have, you know, if I have done this amount of damage, then I have to restore that amount in that particular deal. Now, we're talking about situations. We're not talking about theft, because theft has more added to it, because there's more punishment. If I steal your cow, then I have to, well, I'm going to be stoned to death, but I'm supposed to make restitution as well. I'm supposed to give you your cow back plus five more if I have done that, if I have ripped you off in some way. But in personal injury, this law is to make the punishment fit the crime. So first of all, it demands punishment be taken or reparation be made, and it also limits just how much it could be. I mean, we see this sometimes with civil lawsuits. You know, you might have a criminal suit against you, and you completely get off. For instance, the guy who shot the guy down there in the church, there's not even going to be a criminal lawsuit, but there could definitely be a civil lawsuit. His mama could sue that guy for shooting her little boy. Did you know that's possible? Now, Texas, thank God, limits a bunch of that stuff. It depends on where these things happen. But what that's the law is intended here to do is to make sure that you don't get 100 times as much for something, especially in an accidental situation. So penalty equal to the offense and prevented people from taking personal revenge, because these laws were carried out by the people as a whole. Okay? And so what we see is he says, all right, you've heard that, okay? But I say unto you, verse 39, that ye resist not evil. Now that just, man, you were the boy. Mennonites will not serve in the military. You don't know why? That right there. They are pacifists, which means that they will not, they won't fight. Sometimes they will serve. They try to do a kind of a Sergeant York kind of a thing, where I'll serve, I just won't carry a rifle or something like that. And I don't know how they handle that now, but throughout the history of the United States, we've seen this. So he says, I'm saying resist not evil, but whosoever shall smite thee on thy right cheek, turn to him the other also. Well, first of all, first thing we see from this is that has nothing to do with war, okay? If we were to go a few to a different book, but take a look at what John the Baptist has to say, okay? He addresses Roman soldiers that are coming to him to be baptized. And he says to them, he says, be fair and be content with your wages. If the only way for them to get right with God was to be pacifist, he would have to tell them, you have to get out of the military. Because Roman soldiers, they thumped people's heads all the time. And so he's not talking about being a pacifist. Turn to them, somebody the other cheek. What we're talking about here is insult. So when someone personally insults you, also we're not talking about defending someone else. This has to do with you. With your own person. This is when you get insulted somehow. And a pretty big insult is for somebody to slap you on your cheek. And so what Jesus says is, he says, don't resist an evil person. Don't fight back. If they hit you on one cheek, well then, show to them the other cheek. Turn the other cheek. Why don't you hit me on this side too? Now, I kind of think it's funny, but to read what people have done with this throughout the history of the last 2,000 years is really interesting. There was an evangelist named Billy Sunday, who before he got saved was a professional boxer. And at a big crusade type event, he was preaching, and this guy came up on stage and, oh, Sunday, you think you're better than us. And he sucker punches Sunday. So Sunday gets up. Just give me one right there. So the guy hits him on the other side of the jaw. Boom! And I guess hits him hard, knocks him down again.
He gets up, he rolls up his sleeves, he says, that's all the Lord requires of me. And then he gave this guy a thumping. I don't think this has anything to do with defending your life. I don't think this has anything to do with war. I don't think this has anything to do with national law. I don't think we should enact this, even though many people want to. You know, old Bloomberg, what did he say? When he was 19 years old, he certainly wouldn't have been trusted with a firearm. Neither should any 19-year-old. Like, well, you knucklehead, the world is filled with 19-year-olds with M4s protecting your freedom. What a foolish thing to say, right? To try to take this and impose this on like the law of a nation or country is to miss the point. He's not teaching pacifism. He's going to say in Romans chapter 13 that the powers that be don't bear the sword in vain. Obviously, God wants for there to be police, and they are to use force and violence if necessary. Obviously, there is to be a military to protect sovereign borders. That's not what he's talking about. What he's talking about is personal offenses. He's talking about when someone insults me, what am I supposed to do? Get them back or turn the other cheek? Well, I'm supposed to turn the other cheek. And so we see here, he talks about it, personal insults in verse 39. In verse 40, if any man will sue thee at the law and take away thy coat, let him have thy cloak also. Now, once again, this isn't talking about a murder case or something like that. This is talking about something so petty and trivial that someone would be trying to take your shirt. That's a tunic. He says, give them your cloak as well. Give them your coat. Give them your outer. Here. He's already told us if somebody has aught against you, leave your gift, go and try to be reconciled to them, and keep it out of the court if at all possible. As far as Christians are concerned, when it comes to personal insult, we should turn the other cheek. When it comes to injustice, just be wronged. Just be wronged. Don't fight back. Just be wronged. That's not the only place the Bible says that. 1 Corinthians chapter 6. The Apostle Paul was brokenhearted. He says in chapter 6, verse 1, dare any of you having a matter against another go to law before the unjust and not before saints? Do you not know that the saints shall judge the world? The world should be judged by you. Are you unworthy to judge the smallest matters? Like somebody wanting to take your shirt? Know ye not that we shall judge angels? How much more things that pertain to this life? If then ye have judgments of things pertaining to this life, set them to judge who are least esteemed in the church. Put this before the children of the church. Surely they can figure this out. I mean, he's not pulling any punches with this. I speak to your shame, he says. Is it so that there is not a wise man among you? No, not one that shall be able to judge between his brethren? But brother goeth to law with brother, and that before the unbelievers. Now therefore there is utterly a fault among you, because ye go to law one with another. Why do you not rather take wrong? Why do you not rather suffer yourselves to be defrauded? Nay, ye do wrong and defraud, and that your brethren. Be defrauded. That's pretty tough to take. And I got to be honest with you, if the Bible didn't say it, I wouldn't ever bring it up. But think about our lawsuit happy culture. Oh my goodness gracious sakes alive. You can die in jail just waiting for your day in court. And that's speedy. Aren't we guaranteed the right to a fair and speedy trial? We're talking months. And most of it has to do with dockets that are so full. Just lawsuit after lawsuit after lawsuit after lawsuit after lawsuit. My favorite one right now is Pete Rose is suing the Major League Baseball because he got booted because he was betting and gambling on the games, and they kicked him out. He wants in the Hall of Fame. He deserves to be in the Hall of Fame, but they booted him out. If they're going to let these cheating Astros get away with it, they need to let him back in. Lawsuit. Cracks me up. I mean, he's been sitting, they have him on TV. He's on TV and he's commentating the games the whole time. He's just sitting there going, I just can't stand it. You gotta let me in that Hall of Fame. eat alive, whether it's just eating him alive. It's sad. Because we ought to have more important things to worry about. We ought to be busy about more important things. And we ought to learn that personal offenses, when somebody wrongs us, just take the injustice. It's more important to get along with folks than it is to prove who's right or who's wrong. So if they want, if they come to you and they just you've got to give me this, so you just give it to them. Here. I'll leave it up to God. So Romans 12, real quick. Romans chapter 12. Dearly beloved, verse 19. Verse 18. Let's read it. Read 18. Let's read 17. Recompense to no man evil for evil. You see, that's what lawsuits do many times. It's one thing to try to hold on to what you've got, but I've got a friend, and he's a lawyer, and one time he was talking about, he said the one kind of law that's the absolute worst, in his opinion, is divorce. Because he said you have two people who vowed to love, honor, and cherish one another that are now doing everything they can to absolutely destroy the other one. And it's not about support for her and the kids. It's about just devastating him. I can't stand him. I want to hurt him. And so now you've got these two people suing each other and trying to figure out how they can hurt each other the very most. Okay? So he says, recompense to no man evil for evil. Provide things honest in the sight of all men. If it be possible, as much as lieth in you, live peaceably with all men. That's what Jesus is saying here. Hey, you want my shirt? Here, just take my coat too. I mean, if you are that petty, if you're going to be that petty, here, just take it off. I'll give it to you. Gosh, if you need that, we used to leave the doors unlocked at the church at Grady, and every now and then somebody would freak out about that, you know. You leave the church unlocked? Said, yeah, well, some people sleep in there sometimes. Oh, gross. Yeah, it kind of is. Sometimes you have to clean up after them. So what are they going to do? They're going to steal the Bibles? You know, what are they going to do? They're going to steal the pews? They can have them. We'll give them comfortable chairs if they do, you know. Well, just take it. If it's that important to you, if it's that terrible. Now, we're not talking about a thief breaking into your house, trying to take your stuff out of your house, and maybe threatening your life. That's not what we're talking about. We're talking about some kind of petty lawsuit that takes place. Just suffer the injustice here. Just have it. He says in verse 41, he says, and whosoever shall compel thee to go a mile, go with him twain. Twain means two. This one would probably be the worst of all, especially growing up an American, because we have an amendment that says that we don't have to quarter troops. Right? Do we even know what that means? I hope that we would. The old British, when they came over here, they invoked the same kind of ideology the Romans had borrowed from the Persians. And that was that if a Persian officer, a Persian military, if he is sending a dispatch and he is riding his horse as hard as he can ride his horse across the Persian, vast Persian land, and his horse is tired, when he rides up beside you, get off. I need that horse. You are supposed to get off, give him your horse, take his exhausted horse and do something with it. Maybe he'll pay you back and maybe not. So along come the Romans. After the Greeks, and they invoke something similar, and it's this, that a Roman, a legionnaire, he's carrying a pack, and it weighs from 50 to 75 pounds, and he's got a shield, and he's got some spears, and he's got his junk, right? Well, he can come up to you, a civilian. We're all walking down the road, here comes the Roman legion. You scoot out of their way, or maybe he's not even in formation. Maybe he's just going somewhere. You! Carry my pack 1 mile. Roman roads were all marked with mile markers. You talk about humiliating. You talk about, what if you were going the other way? What if you had just left town and he was headed back to town? You were trying to get home, and this Roman, he doesn't even have to be an officer, just a legionnaire. Carry my pack here. Remember Simon of Cyrene? When that Roman told him, what did he tell him? You carry the cross for him. He can't bear it. He had no choice because of this particular law. So what does Jesus say? I mean, they hated the Romans. Oh, they hated them. They had occupied their land. They raped their women. They were just scum that they had to put up with. And they crucified Jews. See, a Roman citizen couldn't be crucified, but they crucified Jews all the time. They loved it. They were mean and cruel, most of them. Not all of them, but some of them. Anyway, talk about humiliating. Jesus doesn't say, go try to change this law. Isn't that interesting? Nowhere in the Bible do we ever read about trying to change a slavery law, ever. Nowhere in the Bible are we ever told that we are to be on a picket line, that we are to try to get unjust laws changed. We are not told that. We are told, submit to the powers of be. You have a choice. You either don't submit and die, or you do submit, and you have to decide if those laws are something that cause you to sin against God. If they don't cause you to sin against God, like this one, then you just do it. But don't just do it. Carry his pack 2 miles for it. Just go ahead and double up. 2 miles is a long way, especially carrying a 50, 60-pound pack. The stinking old pack of the group of people that are occupying your land, that are throwing your people in jail, that are used as a police force against you. I mean, think about the implication of what he's saying. Now, here's the thing. This little portion right here is probably, it's not the most, because we're going to look at the most here in just a minute, but it is probably the second most difficult passage, in my opinion, almost in all of the scripture, of if you are a Christian, this is what you should live like. When the law, so I want to apply this to something right now. Let's say, I'm going to do it.
Don't go there.
Joe Biden gets elected, and the very first thing he does is go to war on the Second Amendment with everything that he's got. And they pass it. Well, that'd take a lot to do, but it's doable. He might have to do away with the Electoral College to do it, but they're working on that, been working on that for years. Let's say he gets it done. As Christians, do we hand over our firearms? Or do we kill every single solitary person? Mr. Anderson will be called upon at the same time to be one of the ones killed. Probably not. They'll probably bring somebody else in. I wouldn't trust the local cops. I would bring in an outside force, probably from out of the country. Don't think that it's unthinkable either. I was in Venezuela about 10, 12 years ago. Was unthinkable to me at the time that they could be in the place that they're in right now. So don't think it's unthinkable. Do we as Christians justify ourselves in that regard? Go back to the American Revolution. I mean, this applied big time during the American Revolution. For every voice there was saying, let's throw some tea in the harbor, there was another voice saying, we're supposed to submit. Britain is our sovereign. Okay? Now, I've gone through and I've done a sermon on what their justifications were, and I think that they were decent justifications, but not ironclad by any means. And there was all kinds of things that there's all kinds of questions and all that. This is hard. Don't ever think that this is easy. This is really, really, really hard. But we should be leaning more toward that than we should the other way. What we should be doing as Christians right now is we should be on our faces praying. And we should be making sure, my poor kids, they gotta talk at the breakfast table about how dangerous socialism is and what's gonna happen if the wrong people wind up in office. Listen, we gotta teach people. Somebody's voting for Nancy Pelosi. Somebody's pulling that trigger. Lever. it's happening. So when you read this, please don't just gloss over this. Jesus wasn't kidding. When he tells them to submit to a Roman officer or just any Roman soldier and to carry his pack and just do twice as much, what would that look like today? Some unjust government official that is requiring you to do something, taxation. You don't pay it. Whose inscription? Who's on that inscription?
I thought you were going to Bernie Sanders out and saying if he forces us to give half of it back.
Well, I've already almost kidnapped on their back. I sat down and did some figuring. Whose picture's on that? Well, it's George's. Well, then give George what belongs to George, but give God what belongs to him. You know, I guess to me, as a Christian, when I read that, my personal pride and my personal shield of you can't come in here, get up out of my face, man, it just comes all over me when I read. There's other stuff here that I'm like, you know, okay, I understand that. Lust being adultery, hatred being murder, I understand that. I'm not saying that I'm above any of that either. I deal with those kinds of things too in your thought life. But this one right here, oh, but that's not even the worst. Give to him that asketh thee, and from him that will borrow of thee, turn not thou away. Sure.
You give your money to your taxes, that you know that money's going to be spent on abortion, things like that. You know what you've earned.
I don't know. You fight it as much, and here's what, when I say that slavery and things like that, the Bible doesn't talk about that. These people didn't have that right. We do. We have the right to use means to fight those. And I think that we should use every means that we have, giving money to groups that lobby against that, voting, you know, just every piece of freedom that blood that has soaked these lands for so many years has been spilled for, we should use every bit of that. But I would also say there's probably not ever going to be a time as Christians that we would say that all of our tax money is going to be spent for things that we approve of. But abortion certainly is a good one. So, you know, I mean, once again, at least at this stage, we have got to use the things at our disposal to fight against those kinds of decisions. And, you know, there's a group of people in New Mexico right now. They just passed the red flag laws in New Mexico. They're totally unconstitutional. I don't think there's any way they'll stand up in a court of law. I think it's a testing ground for the liberal agenda. But nonetheless, illegal search and seizure and no warrant. All they have to have is, it's as bad as CPS. Anonymous phone call, here I come. If you don't let me in, I'll come back with the law. I have no, don't get me wrong, CPS does some great things every now and then. I can't think of any, but I'm sure they do. But you see what I mean? My point, Aaron, is that this is not easy. It's not easy to think through. The Mennonites actually made it easier by just saying this is teaching pacifism. What's really hard is to say, I want to serve for the right reasons. But what about when you, as a soldier, are commanded to do something that you know or question to be wrong? How do you know the bad guy's really the bad guy? And guess what? Some of the bad guys that my granddad fought are now, they're the good guys now, you know? I mean, I had a policeman tell me the other day, he said, boy, it just comes all over me. They're trying to legalize marijuana. He said, I worked really hard to keep that stuff off the streets. He said, I sacrificed time with my family. He said, I put my life in harm's way to put a stop to that. And now they just want to legalize it? So you're telling me I spent 20 years, 30 years, whatever, and I just wasted my time? Hey, not. Please don't think that I'm saying that this is easy, nor is it easy to think through. But I think that as Christians, we ought to wrestle really hard with this. And I also think it all has to do, I'm done after this, it has to do with the attitude. Is it my attitude that if you insult me, I am going to dot your I? That's the wrong attitude for a Christian. is it my attitude that I don't do nothing for nobody for nothing? Well, that's the wrong attitude. You know, like somebody said, well, how do you know if somebody, obviously this giving to those who ask of you and loaning to those, it has to do with someone who's in need, obviously. People that aren't in need, like Bernie, sorry, Bernie, I ain't giving to you. Not until you make it. I don't think we'll have to worry about that. But at some point, we will. Every time we do this, we're playing this little game. We go, and then we go. This is what the United States, this is what it looks like. And we're going left as we do that, right? So many of these things are coming, they're going to happen, and we as Christians, we're raising a whole group of new Christians. We're going to have to ask and answer these questions. How do I help my kids? At some point, we may have to fight. I was just watching. I'll quit. You're dismissed. Let's pray. And if you need to go, we can go. And then if you want to hear the story, I'll tell you.